Hey, Mike Matchett here. Thanks for checking out this bonus episode of the Tech Top 6. Warren and I have been talking about technology for quite some time, and this episode was recorded earlier this summer. Thanks for listening, and be sure to hit subscribe.
Small world, big data.
When reading this article, I thought about two sayings. One is that pay me now or pay me later. And the other one, if you think it's difficult now, just wait till tomorrow. You got to get a head start on it, and you got to start looking at IP version 6, because whether you like it or not, you're going to have to move to IP version 6.
Hi, Mike Matchett with Small World Big Data, and we are back with this week's episode of the Tech Top 6 with Warren Avery, who is the chief editor of IT Weekly Newsletter. Each week we come in and we're going to talk about the top 6 technical articles that Warren has handpicked out of the IT Weekly Newsletter, which in turn is a curation of, what, 500 data sources, Warren?
Oh, we have well over 500 data sources. I average somewhere, Mike, between 300 to 600 emails a day. And I struggle every day to find 10 good, solid technical articles on a wide range of subjects. So whatever strikes our fancy, that's what we're after.
All right. Yeah. So these are going to be articles that are not full of any marketing hype. They have no marketing hype at all. They're pretty much product free, although some of them can be from vendors and sponsors, if, as long as they're sticking to the technical and technology how-to and why-fors. So if you want to get a hold of this IT Weekly Newsletter, it's free. We'll tell you at the end of the show how to sign up for it. It'll come to your mailbox twice a week. We are just now going to dive into the top 6 articles that we picked this week to talk about. In fact, we're going to jump into it. Now is the time to jump into something as the first article, hyper automation. It's called hyper automation. I don't know. As a marketing guy, we start talking about hyper convergence and hyper this and hyper that. What is hyper automation?
Well, hyper automation is an article out of GCN by a gentleman named Jeremy Hogg. You and I have talked about digital transformation, you know, quite a bit. And what's happening now is that companies are using RPA, robotic process automation. And what's happening is you have all of these RPA silos all over different areas. And so what hyperautomation means is that companies want to tie together these various RPA silos and get a comprehensive look so they're not duplicating efforts. RPA is good for a particular area, but you have lots of different areas within a company. And what hyperautomation goal is to tie all these various RPAs together. And so the term is used by Gartner in terms of discovering these RPAs, designing them, automating, measuring and monitoring. And the whole idea is to integrate these RPA silos, because RPA is becoming very, very popular. So if you hear the word hyperautomation, Mike, all it means is that bring together all these RPA silos. That's all it is. But it's a good article talking about that.
That's a strange way to go with terms, because hyperconvergence was taking convergence to an extreme. And now it sounds like hyper itself is being viewed as the word that implies convergence and applying it to other things. But we can talk with Gartner later on, I guess, about how they come up with terms and argue with them till the cows come home. So, okay. So converging automation silos together might be called hyper automation. That's great. Let's talk about something that's a little bit more fun, which is how to become a female data scientist. What does it take for someone to become a data scientist these days, particularly in an area of math and science, which is traditionally all male?
This article is called 4 Ways to Excel as a Female Data Scientist, and it's out of Information Week. It's by a lady by the name of Alicia Frame, who's a lead product and data scientist at Neo4. And this is a terrific article, regardless of your gender, and also regardless of the career path you want to pursue. It just happened to be, she's talking about females getting into be data scientists, but she has 4 terrific suggestions. Number one, focus on what's really important. Once you set your goal on something, don't get sidetracked. Stay focused. Number two, don't take a promotion that's not in your best interest. Moving up isn't always the best idea. Don't be afraid to move sideways to get the more experience that you need. She also made a good point that I always did. I always came to any sort of a meeting with a notebook and a pad. And it shows that you're ready, you're paying attention, and you're interested in taking notes, okay? And the last one is, she said, is always soften your soft skills. Hard skills are important, but you got to have empathy. You got to be able to listen. You got to be able to look at people. You got to be able to converse. So don't underestimate soft skills as a career development tool. So I thought it was a great article. It applies to females, but I say, take out the word female, take out the word data scientist, and apply it to anybody going to any real career. She doesn't talk about the technical skills. There are articles that talk about the mathematics and all of that. This talks about aiming for a career path and what it takes to pursue it. So I think it's just good advice for anybody.
I know of the company that she works for is Neo4j. They make a nice graph database, and it's pretty much wide open in technology these days. Very much from my perspective, anybody can do anything. So I don't know what better advice you can give than to give advice that's good for everybody.
Yep.
Speaking of career paths, there is another career path that we can talk about, which is cybersecurity. And that's a big, wide open place as well as data science today. What should people be thinking of if they're looking at a career in cybersecurity these days?
Well, this is an article by Brian Krebs, who writes an article called Krebs on Security. Mm-hmm. And when I read it over, I thought this is really interesting, because what he talks about is, why are there so many security jobs going unfulfilled? And what he talks about is that when you're a hiring manager, you really don't care what sort of degree he has, what sort of certificate you have. What you care about is, can you do the job? And he listed, let's see, it's about seven of these areas. And what he did was he listed one thing about, can you actually show me how to do some basic skills? And then have you actually had experience doing those tasks? For example, common exploration techniques. 66% of the people interviewed can't even explain what that is. More importantly, only 4.5% of them have actually done it. He talks about computer architecture, 47%. Almost half the people don't even know what computer architecture is. More importantly, only 12% of the people can actually do the job. He talks about networking. You know, 46% of the people cannot even talk about the basics of networking. And what I found interesting is only 4% have actually had hands-on experience. And he goes through several other areas, and he talks about, forget about getting the certificates, forget about the degree, get some hands-on experience. So it's a must read for anybody, because if you're in security, it requires discipline, it requires persistence, it requires attention to details, but more importantly, it takes practical, hard skills to do this job. And you and I both know that to become a seasoned security person takes years. It's not something you go into and develop it right off the bat. It takes a lot of hard work. Good article all the way around about it if you're taking a look at a career in cybersecurity.
I'm looking at some of the skills that are listed here on the notes you gave me, and it looks like a study sheet for the bad actors, in fact. So study up cryptography, know a bit programming, understand how networks work, Linux, architecture, exploration. That's almost a roadmap for bad actors as well, right?
So
if you're going to be the cybersecurity guy, you really have to have all the counter skills and the knowledge of that whole background available to you. Not necessarily that you had to be a bad actor, but you do need to be able to go toe-to-toe.
For me personally, I would never be a good cybersecurity guy, because I don't have that attention to detail. And I used to joke, I know how to program, but I'm a 90% programmer. Well, the money is in the last 10%. And I don't have the patience. So if you're going into security, you've got to have attention to detail and you've got to be persistent. So
awesome.
Good article.
Speaking of being persistent, we are going to switch up a little bit and talk about what happens when you're no longer in a cloud and you're no longer in a data center. You're out at the edge and you still need to persist something. And I guess people are calling this now fuzzy place to be doing computing, fog computing. Mm-hmm. So what does this mean really? And what does it imply to say that you are getting invested in implementing fog computing?
Yeah, this is a gentleman, David Linthicum, who's the chief cloud strategy officer for Deloitte. It's called When to Use Fog Computing Nodes, and it's out of InfoWorld. Fog computing, if you imagine, you have the cloud and you have the edge. There comes issues and problems you have where the edge don't have the ability to do the job, whether by latency, you can't wait for it to go back to the cloud and come back again, or the edge just doesn't have the computing power to process the information. And actually, this fog computing existed from 2018 from the IEEE standard called 1934. Hmm. And they talked about interoperability between the edge and different servers and the cloud. So basically, just imagine it's a server that sits between the edge and the cloud. And if you can imagine, if my cloud is back in New York and I'm sitting in LA, you know, it's what, a millisecond per 1,000 miles, so it's 3 milliseconds there and 3 milliseconds back. And if you're doing, you need high response time, that 6 milliseconds isn't going to cut it. So you put a server somewhere else that can interface with it. So it's just merely an interactive server that sits there and acts as a buffer.
Really another layer in our architecture stack. So if you're studying to become a cybersecurity expert, need to know a little bit more about architecture, this would be a good article. We just said, the other term I've heard for this might be called factory edge or something. And it really comes between that area of IT and OT, which some people use to describe what they do out at the edge beyond, you know, outside of technology and out as opposed to information technology, and that there would be servers in there. I'd be interested to read this, though, to find out who controls, owns, and manages those and who's responsible for fog servers. Yep.
David also points out a good point in where fog computing should be used and where fog computing should not be used. So it's not a panacea for everything at the edge. So take a look at it and go from there.
All right. Now, your next article, it just kind of blows me away a little bit because this is probably full of information I would have liked to have known when I got into this gig of being an industry analyst, how to get started as an industry analyst, what we actually do. I'd still be curious to know what it is we actually do every day, Warren, even though I've been doing it for 10 years now. So you found an article here, and I actually get asked this a lot, found an article here from Forbes about, are you analyst material, and talking a little bit about what it takes or what it means to be an industry analyst. So tell me what some of his advice is here.
Well, this is an article out of Forbes magazine, as we said. It says, are you analyst material? And it's by a gentleman that I know, Richard Steinman. He's the chief strategy officer at Blanco Tech Group. I've known a lot of analysts. I still know them. I get a lot of articles from them. But I've always, what do you actually they do? And he doesn't necessarily talk about the particular skills, because everybody has the ability to be an analyst, but you have to go into it with your eyes wide open. And what he says is that analysts, there's some good things and there's some bad things. The bad things, he said, if you're a top analyst, you're on the road all the time. The travel schedule is horrible. You've got to do a lot of research. You've got to do a lot of writing. And he says, and the salary is good, but it's not spectacular. He said, so if you go in there thinking you're going to make $10 million a year as an analyst, probably not going to happen. But he said, on the other hand, the upside that is you have a real ability to affect your industry. More importantly, there are two sides of that coin. You're working with companies and you can help them avoid making a mistake. You can help them with their strategy. You can actually become a confidant and a trusted business partner, which as a salesman, that's what I always wanted to be, as a trusted business partner. But analysts have an inside track to that. But he said, on the other hand, you can actually work with vendors in terms of setting their product direction, in terms of features, when it's going to come out, who their competition is. He said, all in all, being an analyst is, in addition to the hard skills, there's some good points and there's some bad points. It's a long read. I've just barely summarized it, but it is a very, very good article. If A, you're thinking about becoming an analyst, and also if you're just curious about what they do and how they go about it, that's just, I found it just absolutely fascinating. So it's a good read all the way around.
I have, at the same time, almost nothing to say right now and probably hours of things to say about this. So I will hold off. If anybody has any questions for me, I'll give you my email at the end and we can talk about being an analyst on the side. Happy to talk to anybody about that.
And here's a good question I have. Does anybody get into the business to become an analyst, or is it just, oh, by the way, here, go talk to this customer and now you're an analyst? It's got to be an interesting story of how people become an analyst. And I just found it fascinating.
And I have an interesting story as well. I think that really, though, at the end of the day, you have to provide value to people and you have to have a perspective that people find valuable in turn. So if you can deliver that and bring that along, I think you have a possibility of being an analyst. If you're just thinking, oh, I can sit back and do some surveys and pontificate from an ivory tower, you're not going to be an analyst for very long. You really have to, you really have to get out there and help people. All right. Now, this brings us to our last article, which is something as an analyst, I have actually struggled with analyzing too, which is IPv6. And people have been talking about this for a long time. They said, hey, we're going to run out of internet addresses. IPv4 has a limited number of addresses, and the world grew so big that every device gets an address and we're going to run out. And so they've been predicting this cliff edge, kind of like when we got to the year 2000 Y2K problem. They thought dates were going to run out. But so far, I don't see it that much. I don't see a lot of IPv6 adoption. So what's going on here? Do companies really have to move to IPv6? And if so, yeah. When?
Well, it's not a matter of if, it's only a matter of when. This is a great article that said, should enterprises avoid or embrace IPv6? And it's out of NoGener. It's a gentleman by the name of Gary Auden, who's the president of Delphi Incorporated, big time telecommunications expert. And the biggest problem with IPv4, it was a 32-bit operating system. Well, sooner or later, every single device you have, whether it be a refrigerator, a stove, a Nest, an Alexa, smartphones, computers, printers, everything has an IP address, and they are out of IP addresses. And you can't go to ICANN anymore and get a block of IPv4. But what's happening is that there are brokers out there who are storing, has these IPv4 addresses available. When companies merge, they have extra IPv4 addresses. And so sooner or later, you're going to run out of it. IPv6 is a 64-bit addressing system, which means it's about 1,048 times more addresses than IPv4. So the question isn't, Mike, whether you have to go to IPv6. The question is when. The problem is that you got to run IPv4 and IPv6 side by side initially. You can't just cut the wire. You've got to replace switches, routers. That whole interface infrastructure has to be changed. And can you imagine going to your CEO and saying, I want to put in IPv6. And the first question he's going to ask is it working now? And you'll say, yes, but. CEOs don't want to hear about the yes, but. Make it work. But you got to work it. It's going to be a horrendous amount of infrastructure issues, technical problems, people problems. But the question isn't if, it's only a matter of when. And when reading this article, I thought about two sayings. One is that pay me now or pay me later. And the other one, if you think it's difficult now, just wait till tomorrow. You got to get a head start on it, and you got to start looking at IPv6, because whether you like it or not, you're going to have to move to IPv6. So that's it for this week. And as I love what Elmer Fudd says, that's all, folks. So anyway.
No, that's
always like Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, no, it was like last week was dad jokes. This week it's old Bugs Bunny. I just want to also make one input to that is like IPv6 is a 64-bit address is much more than 1,000 times larger than a 32-digit number than IPv4. It's 2^128 bit, 2^128, which is going to be a huge number. So we won't run out, and you can put an IPv6 address on every edge device in the world. Hopefully.
Well, see, this shows my lag. See, my experience is 50 miles wide and 1 foot deep. See, you as an analyst, you're 50 miles deep and 1 foot wide.
So. What? Oh, thanks. Thanks. I wish that's probably true. Probably true. And we've got more to say about that in another show, I think, on some of my favorite analyst advice. Maybe I'll bring that in as a segment here, which could be interesting. So IPv6, yeah, we want to leave that. So here's my question, though, for the audience then. Have you implemented IPv6? Are you doing anything about IPv6 out there? Please take a minute or two and hit me up. Just send me an email if you'd like. I'm at mike@smallworldbigdata.com, and that'll come directly into my mailbox. Warren, if someone wants to sign up for the IT Weekly newsletter, what should they do?
Well, the IT Weekly newsletter is absolutely free. We don't charge you anything for it. But all they got to do is go to our website, itweeklynewsletter.com. There's a subscribe button there. Hit that. We'll send it out to you. You can send me an email address at wavery@itweeklynewsletter.com. Request it. I'm also on LinkedIn. I've got about 9,400 connections. Yeah, send me a connect. We'll connect it on there. But most importantly, two things. One is we don't use any cookies. We don't put anything out on your computer. We don't track you. All we're interested to know is who visits our site and what article. And if after a few weeks you find the newsletter intrusive or of no value, send me a remove. I'll take you right off of it. I'm not going to try and talk you into staying with it. So that's not what we're all about. We're trying to get you to understand why you need to solve these technical problems, and not necessarily how. The vendors do a great job on that. I'm going to help you understand why you have to solve it. So send me an email, go on to LinkedIn. We'll get you on our list right away.
Awesome, awesome. And I can't wait to see what's coming up next week, given this tranche of articles. It's just getting more and more interesting as the summer weighs on here. Thank you, Warren, for being here today.
Mike, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I really enjoy this time every single week. So you take care of yourself.
All right. And everybody, come on back for the next week's episode of Tech Top 6. Take care.
This has been a Small World Big Data Podcast.